West of the Cape Drive time. Welcome back to the show. 072-238-0712 is the WhatsApp line. You can query, comment, and or criticize. And having a quick look at the WhatsApp, yep. That prof, I like the way he responds to your questions. He says it like it is. That's Dr. Jason Misiorka. Professor of Law at Howard Law School in the United States, Professor Ziad Motala, has written a letter to the South African Chief Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng following his support for Israel during an online discussion with the Jerusalem Post. Chief Justice Mogoeng made headlines when he suggested that Israelis and Palestinians could learn from South Africa in order for peace to prevail. But he did say that Israel had done nothing to us and that scripturally he had to support the Zionist state. The rest is almost history. But online from the U.S. is Professor Ziad Motala, law professor, Howard University. Professor Ziad Motala, assalamu alaikum. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum salam. Thanks, Shafiq, for having me on your show.
Pleasure. Now, you have had a lengthy relationship with Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng. It goes back many, many years, doesn't it?
That is correct. We were at the University of Natal, as it was then called, over three decades ago. We graduated together in the same class from law school.
Now, in those days, how did Justice Mogoeng Mogoeng strike you? Did you think that he had the potential? Did you think he was going to go all the way, that he was one day going to be sitting in the chair of the Chief Justice of South Africa?
Chief Justice Mogoeng was a very principled person. Those were the days where the resistance in the country was at its pinnacle, and one was confronted with all sorts of challenges. Mogoeng was one of the most principled persons in terms of non-collaboration, in terms of adherence to human rights. And if you talk to any of our classmates, I mean, he pretty much engendered a lot of trust and confidence. Whether he would become the Chief Justice of South Africa, that, I have to be honest with you, never crossed my mind. But in terms of his principle and his commitment to human rights and his commitment, that was never in doubt.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important, isn't it, that we foreground what is going to be some very harsh criticisms of him with something of the man's character. I mean, we're not doing a character assassination of him. We're attacking his ideas. We're not attacking the man.
Undoubtedly, I think you're making a very valid point. As a Chief Justice, Mogoeng has taken the lead with regard to transformation of the bench. He has spoken out very forcefully with regard to transformation of the legal profession. I think in that regard, he needs a lot of praise and accolade as in terms of how he has carried himself out with regard to judicial performance standards, things that his predecessors did not implement. So undoubtedly, I think one has to put that in perspective.
Now, it's a long call, a long cry from where he found himself just the other day. I'm struggling to understand how a Chief Justice could have, in the first place, allowed himself to appear on such a program, on such a theme. It's actually beyond me. I can't sort of take it further than that. I mean, your comment.
Yeah, so there are two things with regard to his conduct. The first is a structural violation of the Constitution. As the Chief Justice of this country, he overstepped the line in wading into a political matter that the judiciary should not be involved in. In other words, he violated the principle of separation of powers. If we take a look at mainstream democratic international practice, there is a clear consensus with regard to foreign policy, the conduct of foreign policy, that does not fall within the ambit of the judicial branch of government. So that's the first transgression. The second is the substance of his statements. It showed a complete disregard for human rights, which is what he has taken an oath to uphold under the Constitution. And he references the scriptures as his guiding point with regard to how he approaches the matter. So you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it was a very unfortunate journey that he traveled.
Now, what really struck me quite profoundly when I watched him doing his online webinar is that he very carefully painted out his viewpoint, as it were, but he prefaced it by saying that he openly disagreed with the policies of a government. He doesn't directly represent government. As I say, there has to be a separation of state and power. But he actively disassociated himself, with what I have problems, with the moral ethics of government. That, to me, was what was so concerning.
So, again, like I said, there's two parts to it. You are right. The latter part, with regard to the moral dimension, is also pertinent. But before we even get to the moral part, it's the question of him even wading into that particular realm. I mean, we have to take a look at the relevant parts of the Judicial Code, and he is subject to the provisions of the Judicial Code. They are very emphatic in terms of a judge's behavior, and if I can refer you to various pertinent parts of the Judicial Code, if you take a look at Article 11F2, it informs us that a judge may participate in debate in matters pertaining to legal subjects, mm-hmm. the judicial or the administration of justice, but does not express views in a manner which may undermine the standing and integrity of the judiciary. And then there's another provision, Article 12(1)(b), that states that a judge must not, and I'm quoting, unless it is necessary for the discharge of judicial duties, become involved in a political controversy or activity. So Article 12(1)(b) of the Judicial Code is very categorical in prohibiting these kinds of engagements with regard to the judiciary. And there are a number of other provisions with regard to the Judicial Code. Article 5 that requires a judge to act honorably. Article 6 that says he must comply with the law of the land. Article 7 that says the judge must always avoid racist, sexist, or otherwise manifest discrimination in violation of equality. So when we take a look at that, I think in totality, his conduct is extremely problematic, both in terms of separation of powers and in terms of the substance of what he said. But the first point you made, in terms of the way he prefaced his comments, making those comments in his private capacity. When we take a look at the Judicial Code, it's very clear. Article 12(1)(b) covers what a judge does also in terms of specifically in terms of his private capacity. So the idea that one can hide behind an opinion under one's private capacity, it's clearly untenable.
Now, let's play devil's advocate. If he had stood up and said, I support the Palestinian people, and done that scripturally as well, would that be as objectionable as what we're discussing right now?
So the latter part would be objectionable. We live in a plural society under the precepts of separation between church and state. The idea of separation between church and state is one of the cardinal principles of mainstream democratic international practice. If he prefaces it based on scriptures, that would be problematic. I mean, you cannot allow religious views, you cannot allow religious doctrinal views to inform and influence what you feel to be a human rights or not to be human rights. But if he said that, as a citizen of South Africa, I support government policy with regard to Palestine. I mean, that is what a law-abiding citizen, that is perfectly correct. That is perfectly defensible.
Now, on the other hand, if one looks at the Palestinian situation, what I also found surprising is that there's more than enough to discuss legally. the contraventions of international law that occurs in the territories, and even the basic misappropriation of the rule of law in that country. Surely, as a judge or a legal expert, he could have gone into that territory as opposed to the scriptures, for example.
Yes, so when we consider Chief Justice Mogoeng's statement, there are background values to judge what is right and wrong under our Bill of Rights. Article 39.1 mandates that when we interpret the Bill of Rights, we consider international law, meaning that international human rights are an operative and an inherent part of our Constitution. It cannot be ignored. His statement denies human dignity and equality to a whole group of people in violation of a considerable corpus of international law. In other words, he relegates international human rights law completely in favor of his interpretation of his scriptures. A judge cannot say, I do not like those background values, and will invoke it selectively based on what my religious book commands me to do. I mean, invoking his religious books is absolutely something that is illegitimate in a constitutional state.
Yeah, so I mean, yes.
You cannot use your religious views as a principle to evaluate the government's behavior or evaluate the Constitution. We are a secular and a plural state. No one's religious views should be used as a criterion to judge the legality, propriety, or the wisdom of government's actions. This applies particularly to high-level government officials and certainly to the highest judicial officer of the country.
Do you think what needs to be understood in terms of the South African constitution and scriptural issues is that, yes, it's a secular constitution, but the constitution in itself does recognize religious rights and religiosity, but we have to understand it in the perspective that no religion is more superior to another. And one of the impressions that the judge could have put across, people could have interpreted that way, that he was saying that his scriptures were more superior than others, so he could therefore make the decision that he made.
So religious freedom is an integral and an important component of our Constitution. One has to understand what that freedom means. It means the freedom to practice your religion in the private sphere as you deemed appropriate. But it does not mean, the latter part of your observation, it does not mean your right to impose those views on everyone else in society, and in the context of the Chief Justice particularly, your right to impose those views disregarding the background values that you have taken an oath to adhere to in terms of interpretation of fundamental rights under the Constitution. So you have a right to practice your religion, but you don't have your right to use your religious precepts as a basis for evaluating what is right and wrong, either in South Africa or around the world. The criterion to evaluate what is right and wrong when you take an oath to uphold the Constitution is based on international human rights law, and that is an absolute. It's not based on anyone's scriptures or interpretation of scriptures.
No, absolutely. Now, I'm going to quote from your article. You have a very interesting sentence from Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Okay, the Archbishop certainly wasn't a lawyer. But this refers to the scenario where Justice Mogoeng was trying to claim that he was neutral. And that is a philosophical absurdity in the situation of Palestine. And you write, and you quote Archbishop Desmond Tutu, "If you're neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor. If an elephant has its foot on the tail of a mouse, and you say that you're neutral, the mouse will not appreciate your neutrality." I think that says it quite eloquently, doesn't it?
Yeah, and that is the part with regard to moral clarity. Moral clarity requires that you first identify who is the oppressor and who is the oppressed. When Mandela and de Klerk were negotiating, the overwhelming majority of the world recognized that the black majority were the victims and the white minority were the perpetrators of a brutal and oppressive system. That's not to say that the entire world did not want the both contending parties to sit around a negotiating table and come to a consensus. But they recognized who was the perpetrator and who was the victim. Yes, you want both parties to agree to transcend to a new order, but you cannot have any moral ambiguity with respect to who is the victim and who is the perpetrator. So I think Chief Justice Mogoeng ignores that indispensable lesson from our experience. He buys into the narrative of a chosen people that should not be criticized. I mean, think about it. If the National Party came to CODESA with the attitude that whites were the chosen people to whom God gave this land, and that the ANC and all the progressive forces would have walked out from any negotiations. I mean, that pretty much makes any sort of negotiations untenable.
No, absolutely. And of course, I mean, there's also the other point that I was quite shocked to see that such an educated and erudite man as our Chief Justice appeared to be so badly informed about the situation in Palestine. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, especially if you are in the legal profession, to realize that things are not right there.
Misinformed about the facts on the ground in Palestine, and also misinformed about the historical collaboration between Israel and apartheid South Africa that worked together on any variety of things like hand and glove. And that was particularly surprising to me.
No, absolutely. It was certainly quite bizarre. Okay, we've heard that some people have approached, I think they call it the Judicial Services Commission, which looks after the area where if judges or advocates or whatever, people in the legal profession overstep the mark. How far do you think him being reported to the JSC is going to go?
So this is not the first time Mogoeng has been reported to the Judicial Services Commission. If you recall, in 2013, a number of quote-unquote liberal organizations in the country and individuals reported him, quite spuriously, I might add. He had made a statement advocating for transformation of the judiciary and transformation of the legal profession, and they criticized him for wading into the political sphere. If I might digress a little bit, it's very interesting to find that none of those groups, DA-aligned groups, have lent their voice to this particular instance where we have a clear transgression into the political realm. It's just interesting. But in that particular instance, they laid a complaint. That complaint was dismissed, correctly so. It was a spurious complaint. So the same thing would occur now. If a group lodges a complaint with the Judicial Services Commission, Chief Justice Mogoeng is the head of the Judicial Services Commission. He will recuse himself, as he did the last time. The matter would then be handled by the Deputy Chief Justice. And the Deputy Chief Justice, if he believes that there is something that needs to be investigated, he will establish a Judicial Conduct Committee. The Judicial Conduct Committee will conduct an investigation, and if they come to the conclusion that what we have is potentially gross misconduct, then they will report that to the entire Judicial Services Commission for the creation of a tribunal, a judicial conduct tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
And a judicial conduct tribunal will then go into a more serious investigation of the merits of the complaint. And if they come to the conclusion that Chief Justice Mogoeng has engaged in gross misconduct, then they will report that to the entire Judicial Services Commission. The entire Judicial Services Commission will then deliberate. And if they feel that Chief Justice Mogoeng should be removed from judicial office, then they will forward a recommendation to Parliament, particularly the National Assembly, and they will have to vote by more than two-thirds in order to validate a removal. So it's a very long process. That's, in a nutshell, the constitutional requirements.
And of course, you alluded to some selective morality a little earlier on when you said the DA-aligned groups and groupies. And even organizations such as AfriForum have been spectacularly silent on this issue. They haven't uttered a peep.
And the silence is profoundly deafening.
Would you say in this case their silence equals consent? Tacitere et consente, to use the only Latin I know?
Well, I think it would be good if some of the journalists asked them what is their response to this particular instance, given that a couple of years ago they were very vociferous with regard to political interference, which really was not there. But this particular instance is a clear example of political interference. So it would be interesting to get their views.
Indeed. Professor Ziad Mutala, a law professor, Howard University, who studied together at the University of Natal all those years ago, 3 decades ago, together with Justice Mokgeng Mokgeng, talking to us about an open letter that he sent in terms of the justice, saying that Palestinians can learn from South Africa, but Israel has done nothing to us, and that scripturally he had to support the Zionist state. Professor Ziad Mutala, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on. Bye.
Sanitize my workstation, my office, the kitchen, but how safe is all this?